Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 170, recorded August 19th, 2010. The Little Dicky Mouse. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite Pro. With prices starting at $10 a month, all of your office PCs can be backed up safely and automatically with Carbonite Pro. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/Windows Weekly. And by Audible.com. For your free book, visit Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers the Microsoft universe. I should call it a multiverse. And here he is. He's versed in multiple things. Mr. Paul Thurrott of
the... You call it the Mooniverse.
The Mooniverse. Like Sung, yeah. Reverend Sung Myung Moon? I don't get it.
Okay.
Paul Thurrott. He is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And he's if he's a little awkward, it's because he's 13,000 miles away.
Right. I'm a little off.
He's in. He's celebrating Oktoberfest in August. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Somebody said that, Chris Dev said in the chat room, we're both drunk, which makes it like a AARP dignation. Dignation right. For retired people. Hey, look, Kevin and Alex will be old someday soon, and then we'll see what happens.
Sure.
So how are you? So you still you're on vacation?
Yep.
You able to follow the world of technology from Germany? Is it?
It's exhausting, Leo.
Do they have newspapers there? Is there some way?
There are newspapers here. I can't read them.
You know, I remember
they have the internets here. And
when I was 11, we went to Europe, mm-hmm. then to Germany. And this was 1967. There was no way to find out what the hell was going on back home except the Herald Tribune, which we got 3 days later. So the baseball scores, you know, how were the Red Sox doing? I had no idea until 3 days later.
Apparently, they were just eliminated 3 days ago.
See, and you knew that. No, it's really quite amazing. And in some ways, I think I bemoan it because it means that it is a little bit more homogenized, isn't it?
Yeah.
That there's nothing, you know, everything is available everywhere.
Right. Well, but I like that because it enables me to do what I'm doing, you know. Well,
that's the good news is, you could be anywhere and do your show.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, the connectivity stuff here has improved dramatically over the, you know, several years ago. And it's also getting to the point now, you know, one of the things that we did on this trip was I have the Windows phone, which is unlocked. And I have my AT&T SIM in there. No worries there. I can buy international data for use here, and it works with the Windows phone. That's great. But we have this iPhone 3GS, and I thought, you know, it'd be nice if I could buy a SIM here and pop it in and have it work. But of course, you can't do that if the phone's locked.
Mm.
So coincidentally, I think it was the first, second, third day, whatever we were here, they released that new unlocker tool that works from the website. And it took all of, you know, 30 seconds, I think, to jailbreak the thing. And we went down the street, and we bought a SIM, just for calls, you know, and it's 1/10 the cost of doing it over AT&T.
Amazing,
you know. So
then you get data. Really makes... It's not just phone calls; it's data.
No, that's just for phone. So her phone, she's using the iPhone. It's just for calls. So you know, she's out, and I'm somewhere else, or I'm back at the house. She can call, and we can get in touch with each other, which is another nicety, you know, because one of the years we did the house swap, I would have to come back in the afternoon. You know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon here is 9 a.m. back home. So that was always my plan. I'd be back for 9 a.m. And I left the kids and my wife in Paris at a park. And I hopped on the train. And I think I was 3 stops down the metro. And I realized, oh, damn it, I forgot my house keys.
Oh, you know, no.
She had the house keys. We had no way of getting in touch with each other in Paris. You know, so I ended up working out of an internet cafe. I stopped at the next stop and I just got off and I got some work done. But, you know, it's just improved dramatically. And you think back the very first time we came to Europe and we literally had no money at all. In fact, I was telling my friends this story the other day. We had breakfast the very first time I ever came to Europe. Well, not to Europe, to France. We had breakfast at this place, and the coffee was incredible. So you can imagine,
oh, yeah,
coming from the U.S. and having this for the first time, it was a religious event for me. And I think we had 5 cups of coffee each or something, and my sister was with me as well. And they left the store. The guy introduced us to his family. It was the craziest thing. None of us spoke any French at all. So we leave the store, and I was the last one to know because I had paid the bill. They were still on francs then. And I'm doing the math in my head, and I said, you know, I think we just spent $95 on breakfast. You know, it was one of those moments like, oh, jeez. We had no money.
But the coffee was good.
suffice to say, we actually had lunch at a Whataburger, if you can believe that, in Paris that day because we couldn't afford it.
Yeah. But you had a good breakfast. A Whataburger? They have Whataburgers?
Not anymore, but they did, yeah.
Don't ever have a Big Mac in Paris. That's all I have to say. The secret sauce is different in France.
Yes. The not-so-secret sauce.
It's not so secret. So, well, there you go. There's Paul's little travel tip.
There you go.
Yes, yes.
It's always better in the future, I think, is what the point of this conversation
is. I don't know if that's the case because the phones and everything, but I kind of miss that adventure that travel used to be. It's not as much of an adventure.
Well, it's still an event. You know, for us on this trip, this has been the biggest adventure in the sense that we're not in a big city. We're really out in the boondocks. And when you get out of the cities, nobody speaks English. And it has been an interesting challenge to do things like order food in restaurants and all that. And I like that kind of challenge. And I think that that's part of the deal with this, you know. And it's been okay. You know, it's worked out okay. Hmm. And people are really nice. I mean, it's funny, you know, and it's funny to have, you know, do you speak in English? No. And then they'll go, blah, 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 you know, on right. something. And it's right. like, right. you know, you're not helping, you know.
But you are sophisticated enough. You do not shout.
No.
No. I saw an only relatively funny movie the other night, Dinner for Schmucks with Steve Carell, and he's talking to a Swiss person, and Steve Carell's playing his usual stupid character kind of that he plays on The Office. And he talks like this. Oh, you're from Switzerland.
Sure. And this I saw some people on a boat. We were in France, actually, and we never talked about France because I thought we were going to be mostly in Germany, but we ended up spending a bunch of time in France. And I saw her, she had an American book. So I turned around and I said, excuse me, you're from the United States, right? She said, oh, my God, how did you know? And I said, well, you're kind of obnoxious. You know?
it's the shoes. You're wearing sneakers. So you're probably in 3 days, you'll hear this story. But the big breaking story in the U.S. this morning is that Intel buys McAfee for $7.68 billion in cash.
I'm going to say the same thing that I said when InBev purchased Budweiser, which is you want to believe in the happiest part of your heart that what they're going to do is just put a gun to the thing and put it down.
I don't think for almost $8 billion, I don't think they're going to do that. Holy cow.
Probably not.
Is it worth $7.68 billion? Intel,
no, I don't think so.
What the hell? That's twice what YouTube Google paid for YouTube.
I use products that are free that do the same thing. I'm a little curious.
Does antivirus even have a future with Microsoft? And what the?
I don't know.
Somebody was drunk. I don't know. Somebody was drunk. Paul Adelini had a couple of beers with the. It's just makes sense.
I don't know. You know, it doesn't make any sense because of what Intel is. I mean, I guess it makes sense that some big company might buy that company, some big tech company. But no, I don't understand Intel. That doesn't make any sense other than the possibility, and this would be an interesting antitrust area, that they could do some sort of low-level, you know, functionality with the chipsets, you know, that would make it function better. That would be kind of interesting. But I still I don't get it.
It's baffling. Now, I didn't realize this, but McAfee makes $2 billion a year, so I guess they must be using a multiple of revenue, but...
$1.9 billion from you know, the automatic resubscription that people
understand. They haven't figured out yet. But yeah. Remember, it is a security company. In fact, Paul Annalini says security is, get this, the third pillar of what people demand from all computing experiences behind energy-efficient performance and connectivity. It's like he's making stuff up.
Yikes.
You know, there are three pillars to computing. The size of the window.
Efficient something.
Energy efficiency.
Yeah.
And lunch. Let's all go. The three pillars.
Echo. Yeah. There I said it twice.
The three pillars of computing are security, energy efficient performance, and connectivity. It's like he's throwing darts.
All right. We have the other two, so we figured, what the hell? We have a lot of money. We're going to do something with it.
I get that's probably something, right? We got some cash. It's burning a hole in our pockets.
Spend it before AMD gets it in some kind of a class action suit. I don't know. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Bizarre. We have a lot of other things to talk about. I just thought I'd throw that in just because I thought it was kind of an interesting story, and I wasn't sure if you had seen that.
I literally just saw it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Windows Phone 7. Paul Thurrott is here. We also have news about Aurora and Vail, Windows Live Essentials, and Steve Ballmer, an epitaph. But first, I'm teasing. I'm teasing. And are we going to get the live chat room Q&A in today? Because we didn't get it in last week.
Yeah, I'd like to make this a regular deal.
So what are we going to do just to warn people, to get them ready for this?
Just whatever. We can talk about whatever they want.
There's the chat room.
Fire away.
Fire away chat room.
Oh, good Lord. Look at that.
Not yet, but in a minute.
No. Do not fire away now. There'll be no firing now.
Yet. Paul, tell more French stories, says Andy.
You know, I tried to watch this scrolling list the first couple of times we did the show, and it was so distracting. It was like...
No, don't you watch it. I'll watch it.
I can't do it.
I'll do it for you. I'll watch so you don't have to. But we will take those questions, and we'll do that talking in just a little bit before we do, though. I want to mention Carbonite Pro before you leave home, before you leave the office. You back up, right? Every day, you know, your business data is probably the most valuable asset in the business. What would happen to your business if the computers were to, you know, disappear? If you were to come back the next morning and they're all gone or the data is deleted, what would you do? To paraphrase Carl Malden, what would you do? Well, you'd probably freak out. Maybe you'd even go out of business. But business PCs crash all the time. Hard drives fail. Viruses. User error. You got to keep your business up and running. You got to have a backup strategy. And if that's that external drive that the IT guy goes around and copies everything to once a week, even if it's a sophisticated tape system right there in the office, you got to get it off site too. And that's where Carbonite Pro comes in. You can keep your existing backup strategy. Just add Carbonite Pro. As soon as you do it, all the PCs in your business will automatically be backed up whenever they're connected to the internet. You specify what data, you specify how much bandwidth and how much computer processing it uses. You can make it very, very nice so it doesn't affect anything. It's safe because it's encrypted. Strong encryption before they leave the computer and during transport using 128-bit SSL. It's easy to use. It's automatic. And you have one central dashboard that checks and makes sure your systems are backed up. You can see what the status of your backup is. Summary of all the computers in your business. Every employee can access their own backup files themselves so they can restore anytime they want. Of course, you can be notified. And your office can be up and running again with no headaches, no time lost, no money lost. And because your files are backed up off-site, you can get your files from any computer, even your iPhone or BlackBerry with Carbonite's free iPhone and BlackBerry app. I'll tell you what, Carbonite Pro, it's amazing. Try it free for 30 days. Prices start as low as $10 a month. You only pay for the amount of backup you need. And the 30-day free trial, you just go to CarbonitePro.com, CarbonitePro.com. 8 computers, 5 gigs of backup each. That's a lot. $25 a month. That's all you need. CarbonitePro.com. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Does your Windows 7 phone work in there? Hello, I'm Paul Thurrott. What were you doing over there? What were you doing over there? Oh, you're sneaking over there. He was doing something. So. It was up to, that was the I'm up to no good look, Paul. I just want to tell you.
He goes, dumped water all over my lap.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah, fortunately, it was just water, so.
Uh-huh.
It'll be fine.
So does Windows does your Windows 7 phone work there, or is it a CDMA phone?
It does work here. So I have the AT&T SIM in there.
Oh, that's great. And how's it working?
Yeah. It's working great. Actually, I've had trouble. You know, I bought a 200 megabyte data package, right, for international.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had trouble using it. Using it all, you know, using it up.
Right.
So we've just been leaving it on. You know, we've been using it for the GPS and the car.
Isn't that nice? You get all those features?
That's great.
Yeah, it's nice. So we check it every day. You know, the iPhone has an app where you can check the data usage on that international plan.
Right.
And it's been going up so slow, you know. It's like,
good news.
I really want to use it up, you know.
Good news. So I'm sure you saw the games that they're going to launch on this thing. That's pretty exciting. You don't have any of those yet.
No. This has been kind of this has been weird for me because there's a lot of information about the gaming stuff that I've known for a long, long time. And the thing that bugs me about some of this is that a lot of it's actually been public information.
Really?
You know?
Oh.
But people are suddenly paying attention, you know, so... they talked about how an Xbox Live game running on the phone can have up to 200 achievement points, you know, for example. Well, that was actually revealed back in March, you know, at the original event. That's not new information, but it's like no one was really paying attention, you know. But now that they've made this big announcement, I think that the thing that's interesting and new to me is just the breadth and depth, I guess, of the quality and number of the games that are shipping at launch is amazing. The Xbox Live stuff, you know, to me is kind of a well-known quantity. I just don't have a game, you know. I don't have a single game to test at this point. But as far as the actual functionality, that was, you know, that was previously known to me. But you look at this lineup of games, and it's funny because you can kind of say, you know, if you had gone back a couple of months and said, oh, we're going to have lots of games at launch, it sounds really interesting. You know, okay, that's great. But then you actually see the presentation, you see the number of games that are coming out, and it's pretty impressive. And when you combine it with the capabilities in Xbox Live, you realize the advantage that they have over the other smartphone platforms. You know, and these are advantages. It's clear that Apple understood this because they announced that, I don't remember what they called, but like a game center.
Yeah, they're doing it because there's, you know, there's a number of, like the Plus network, a number of gaming networks, and Apple has decided they want to be part of this. I guess Zynga would qualify as a gaming network.
Well, I would look at it more like it's their attempt to do an Xbox Live.
It's exactly what it is. Yeah. So you share and points, you share games, you participate with other people. Yeah.
It's important to understand what the distinction is because there are some amazing advantages to the Xbox Live stuff, you know, and this isn't necessarily solved just by being on Xbox Live, but one of the things we ran into this week is, you know, my kids have iPod Touches, you know, first generation iPod Touches, and you load them up with games. So when they're bored, you know, we're out and about it. You know, maybe you walk around a city where all you see is a church and a, you know, a town center, and they don't care,
they
you know.
Something.
So,
yeah.
We can have lunch and they, you know, they can sit there for half an hour and play a game and they're okay. Mark, my son had deleted, or somehow a game he had been playing was deleted off of the iPod. So he asked me if I would reinstall it. And I did. But, you know, as I was doing it, it occurred to me, you know, everything you did in this game is gone.
Oh.
Because that's how it works on the iPod, right?
It doesn't say
on the
iPhone. Right. Yep.
One of the things that's interesting about Xbox Live, and again, it's not automatic that it would just fix this for you, but, you know, in Xbox Live, if you if you get achievements in a game, you always have those. Like, they don't go away when you delete the game. You know, like, this game he was playing actually did have in-game achievements, but they're just in the game. You know, they're not connected to anything. You know, there are no leaderboards up on the web where you can compare your score to other people or, you know, play with people
online.
No
achievements, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. So some of these capabilities, bringing them down to this device, I mean, people have been asking Microsoft for a few years now, you know, why don't you make a portable version of the Xbox? And this is it in many ways, you know. I'd also remind people that, and we forget these things, you know, the resolution of a Windows phone is higher than the resolution of the original Xbox, you know. The capabilities
Wait a minute. You're kidding.
No. It's 800 by, you know, 800 by 480.
That's kind of a stunning stat.
Yeah.
So, Microsoft released some screenshots of, I guess this is called The Harvest. These look pretty good.
That one's neat. And that, that was the game they showed off at the original launch event, right? Was this game.
So, you'd seen it.
And it's just an example of, And this is a, you know, a 3D title and all that. There's a version that runs on Windows, there's a version that runs on the Xbox 360, and there's a version that runs on Windows Phone. And this is another huge advantage for the platform because developers can target all three of those environments easily.
And this because of, is this because of XNA? Is that?
Yeah, the XNA.
So they develop once. Is it Silverlight? Is that the same thing?
Yeah. So no, it's not the same thing, but it's very similar to Silverlight.
So if you have ported Silverlight to the phone, then you could.
But, I wouldn't put it that way. It's Silverlight applications on the phone are standard applications, not typically non-game applications.
Got it.
XNA is for the game applications. It's the same underlying language. It's a very similar programming model, you know, managed code, .NET code. But no, they're not. They're not. You wouldn't port from Silverlight to XNA. I think the big distinction, if I had to think about it, would be that if you think about a video game, it's basically a loop, you know, waiting for something, you to do something and then responding to it. And a typical application is sitting there doing nothing until you do something, until you click on something, and then it will, you know, also respond, I guess, in some way. But it's a different kind of programming. I don't think you would usually move Silverlight to XNA. Yeah.
Got it. But if you know one...
You see, Leo, let me expound on this program.
Would you please, Paul, elucidate, educate me. I am a mere pawn.
If you weren't such a child, I could speak
in... I'm a prawn. Think of me as a shrimp next to your gigantic lobster-like torso.
Eventually, my laptop is going to smoke, and then I'll have to do all of this off the top of my head. But anyway, so I think that this Windows Phone game stuff is huge. And I think that now more than I did before, simply because now you sort of see it, you know? And they had told me it was going to be a big deal, and I never really, you know, to me, it was one of the things. You know, if you're a gamer, you might like, you know, you might enjoy the Xbox Live stuff.
Right.
If you like the music stuff, you might like the, you know, the music stuff. To me, it was one of some things, you know. But now that I see this, and you look at how popular Xbox Live is, and you see how committed those people are. We talked about this, how Xbox Live is the only thing Microsoft makes that's anything like an Apple product, in that people just love it unreservedly. I think this is going to be a big deal. I really do. And this confirms my belief, too, that they desperately need to make a Zune device that is simply a Windows phone without the phone, just so people can do this stuff. You know, play games, run apps, listen to music, watch videos, that kind of stuff. I think it would be such a great little device.
You know, the truth is, Apple, same thing. They put out the iPhone. People loved it. And people said, but we want something that could do it without a phone. And they released iPod Touch it was about a year later. So I could see that happening. Absolutely.
I want it to happen now, though. You know, it's cute that we're 4 years later, but I think that it would be nice if they just kind of understood this right away. I think it would help drive the platform faster. You know, if you can buy a device for $200 to $300 with no commitment, well, as Apple has seen with the iPod Touch, I think it would just, you know, increase the exposure of the platform dramatically.
Yeah, I agree with you. It did. It did a good. You know, the touch is perhaps not as big as the phone, but it certainly expands the universe. Maybe it is.
I bet unit wise, it is. I bet it is.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be from a revenue perspective because obviously iPhones generate more per unit because of the
right.
You know, the 2 year.
So the games on Windows Phone 7 will support Xbox Live. There'll be XNA, so that any XNA game on your Xbox will also run on, they'll be easily ported.
Yeah.
Okay.
If anyone has gone to the trouble of creating an XNA game on the 360, it seems like this would be an obvious thing for them to do.
I think a lot of smaller developers, and even I know schools use XNA. It's easier than writing to the metal.
Sure.
And
the tools are all free.
I've met individual developers who've written XNA games for Xbox Live, and I think that exactly. It's the kind of thing that you might have a pretty good ecosystem built around. If you just give it a chance. Moving right along, because I think, can you hear me still?
I can. Sorry.
You just got very quiet. And I thought maybe you'd.
There's a plaintive wailing. Oh, it must be my children.
Anyway. It's either that or they've run out of beer in the beer garden. Yeah. Quick, jump on this slide.
Here's a Europe thing for you.
Yes.
This is a Europe pet peeve. This is very unsafe. And this has been true of almost maybe every home we've been in, possibly every single one. You know, you have a key to get in the house like you would anywhere.
Sure you do.
But the key also locks the door from the inside.
Ah.
So in this house, and this has been true of at least some of the houses, maybe all the houses, you actually can't get out of the house unless you unlock the door with the key.
It's called a deadbolt.
Which is really unsafe. No, it's a key. You know, you can't leave it in the door.
Yeah. You can't leave it in the door?
Well, I guess you could, but we only have one key. So, you get into this weird...
It's a fire hazard.
It's definitely a fire hazard.
Yeah. Double cylinder deadbolt, we call those in the trade. Back when I was locksmithing.
I think that the headline here would be, Europe doesn't care for the safety of its citizens.
It is. I think in the States it's illegal, or it's at least illegal in some places, according to...
It would have to be. It's crazy. It's a big fire hazard. So every time someone leaves the house, you know, they have to, if they don't have the key, they have to knock to get back in. But if I don't have the key, I can't leave. I mean, I can't actually
lock. Well, you know, you can't lock yourself out. Think of it that way.
But I can lock myself in, and that's messed up.
You know, I lost that's the key, just, and I can't get out.
Yeah.
You're right. That is messed up. That's messed up. That is messed up.
Sorry.
That's my Ronald Reagan impression. Well, that's messed up. Small Business Server and Windows Home Server have an update on the way. And you sound pretty excited about this.
Wait. Can you hear me?
Yes. You want to do more on Xbox? Because we can.
Well, we have some other subtopics.
I didn't look at the indentation.
No, they're not really indented, but these are sort of gaming-related topics that are related to the original.
Pardon me. I apologize for hustling you along there.
Sorry. I just wanted to highlight some of the stuff because it happened this week and we talk about Microsoft.
It's our job.
Yeah. Don't make me justify. Microsoft did confirm this week, too, that the Xbox 360 is at its life cycle halfway point, meaning that it has been on the market for 5 years and they intend to sell it for 5 more years.
Good Lord, 10 years is an eternity.
Yeah, I know. Now, Sony has said the same thing. And in both cases, you know, the notion here is the longer you can sell this thing, the make money on it. You know, the R&D on these modern consoles is so great that you really have to have it in the market for several years.
But 10 years in technology, boy. I mean, look at if you here it is. What is the year? 2010.
Yeah. Well, year five on the... Yeah, okay.
But would
yeah.
you be using a device that was shipped in the year 2000 and happily? That's the Xbox, right?
Yeah. I think it's likely that a year or two before that point, they will release something else, right? A brand new console.
Right. You know, and then they keep the other one supported for a while.
Yeah, it stayed in the market for a little while.
Yeah.
So, you know, not unexpected. I think that, you know, the release of the new version of the console this year and the Kinect add-on to Microsoft is like a jump starting, you know, a redo for the Xbox 360 and a start over. So,
yeah,
I think it's still pretty solid. You know, the TV here is really nice, you know, 1080p. You throw the Xbox on this thing and it still looks great. You know, I have to say the games look great. So who knows? 5 years, we'll see, but not a huge surprise.
It does seem like a long time.
It is. It's a very long time, but yeah. I think that's the way these things are going, you know. There was also some news, you know, there was, I think this came out of a blog post by a guy who was a CEO or one of the chief officers at one of the big hardware companies, said that Microsoft had killed cross-platform gaming, meaning there was a very small initiative a few years back where they were going to let developers create games that would run on Windows and on the Xbox 360, and potentially you could play together online cross-platform. You know, some people could be on Windows, some people could be on the PC. And Microsoft actually released one game that I believe allowed this, I think Shadowrun, right?
Hmm.
Now, according to this guy, they had killed the clause in the contract that allowed that, but that apparently is not the case. And there are, in fact, a handful of games that apparently allow this. I've never seen one in recent years, but...
Well, Steam does that, right? Steam's cross-platform.
Are they with the Mac and PC?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know that if all games more... are, but many of them are, certainly.
Yeah, so if you were playing Half-Life Online or something, or Half-Life 2 Online, I could see that, multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the reason this came up now, though, is because with this XNA stuff, Microsoft is allowing people to use essentially the same code to write games on Windows, Windows Phone, and Xbox 360.
Right.
And I don't think we're going to see a lot of games where you're playing together with people, but I think we are going to see games where you can pick up, you know, and where you left off, move from device to device. And I think there's some interesting possibilities there. So I guess that's still in the cards. The other thing that Microsoft did was half-heartedly reconfirm their commitment to Windows-based PC gaming. 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was, when the Xbox, after the Xbox 360 came out, and right before Windows Vista came out, they ported Xbox Live to Windows. Unfortunately, they called it Games for Windows Live. And it just didn't take off in any meaningful way, largely because multiplayer gaming and these online gaming services were pretty well established on the PC side. None of them were charging people, you know, to play online in a central way, you know, like Xbox Live does. Game publishers prefer to charge per game if that's what they're going to do, you know, maybe like a World of Warcraft type game or whatever it might be on the PC. And Microsoft released a couple of games when Vista came out. You may recall Halo 2 came out for the PC at that time. And then shortly thereafter, the original Gears of War came out. And both of those games are games for Windows Live games, you know, essentially Xbox Live games that give you achievements and all that kind of stuff. So this year, with all this Windows Phone stuff coming out, they actually had a very small announcement about some Windows games. But they only had two games to announce. And both of them are essentially new versions of really old games, right? There's a new version of, essentially a new version of Flight Simulator called Microsoft Flight, right? Hmm. And that game dates back to, I think, 1977 or something like that. It's a really old game.
But they keep it up to date. Or you're saying it's the old version?
No, it's a new game, but they had a year or two ago actually fired the entire crew responsible for Flight Simulator. So everyone sort of thought that was over. Or what kind of a game it is, you know, we don't know. And then the other game is Age of Empires, you know, which is dates back to, I think, the late 1990s.
Love that game. Mm-hmm. I wish they would update that. I would play that on a phone.
Yeah, so it's coming out on Windows, and you'll be able to play it online. So it's turning into one of those I forget what they're called.
Massively multiplayer online role-playing games? I'm an Age of Empires fanatic. I keep wishing somebody would release that for the iPhone or the iPad or the Android. So will that be on Windows Phone 7?
No, it's going to be on Windows.
See?
Yeah, I know.
It's being on Windows as a multiplayer game.
Online,
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
It's an online-only game, so you have to play it online in the online world. You know, the original couple of games were essentially single-player experiences that you would play on the PC.
Well, as soon as they release that, I'm going to resign from this job, and you'll see me in a couple of years.
Okay.
Because I love that game.
But the thing is, there's a bunch of stuff missing from Xbox Live on Windows. And some of that stuff is actually available on the phone. You know, so the phone is sort of a first-class client in many ways. You know, you can edit your avatar and do all that stuff. And you can't actually do that on the PC. And I'm surprised they're not making a bigger effort on the PC side, given the cross-platform nature of the XNA stuff. So hopefully they'll do something with that as well.
Yeah, you'd think they'd want everything to have parity if they could. Of course, platforms are so different. It's not easy to do that.
Sure. But I mean, here's 60 games for Windows Phone, and here are two tired retreads for Windows.
Yeah.
Have fun. You know, I mean, where do you think our heart really is, you know?
But that's where they're seeing the future. Well, they're right, though. I think they're not so far off. Look at the same thing's happening at Apple, where you're really wondering, do they care about desktop at all anymore?
Yeah. No, I'm curious they haven't done a Mac.
I'd like to see Age of Empires Mac, but
getting weird dropouts.
Yeah, I don't know why. Don't worry about it. You just disappear for a while, and you say important things, we don't hear them, and it's like that. That's all.
Yeah, it's okay.
No big deal.
Here it just pauses.
Can we talk about Aurora and Vail now?
We can, sir.
Tell me all about it.
Okay. Now, I'm going to warn you up front. This is a server topic. But
I know. No, I've already got my lunch, and I'm ready to enjoy it.
No, hold on. This is actually really good stuff. Vail, of course, is the newest version of Windows Home Server, which is awesome. I use Windows Home Server now as the basis for my home infrastructure, if you will. Mm-hmm. There's a new version coming out, Vail, right? Based on the latest version of Windows Server, et cetera, et cetera. There's a new version of Small Business Server coming out that's codenamed Aurora. And Aurora is actually based on Windows Home Server, right? So it looks and works a lot like Vail. The differences are that Aurora works with domains, right? Microsoft's Active Directory stuff, group policy, and all that stuff. Yeah. But it's this scene of this kind of thing. It's really kind of amazing. It's neat. So you actually would add users and computers and things like that to the server in the same way on Aurora that you do on Vail. But when you do it on Aurora, you're actually adding those things to Active Directory.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really, really neat. And it's designed for real world small business. So the notion being that, you hire somebody, they come in, maybe they want to use their own laptop. That's no problem. You install this client on their machine and it creates a domain account for them. But one of the neat little things it does is it says, hey, we notice you have this other account over here. Do you want us to pull in all of the settings, all the customizations, all of the data files? And if you say yes, this new account will work and look just like your old account, which is kind of a nice way to do that. It's kind of tough. Right before I came here, I installed both of these things, and we weren't allowed to talk about it for a couple of weeks. I'm not sure what happened. Maybe the public release got pushed back or whatever. So this week they finally announced both of these. They're both available publicly. So if you want this stuff, they're both available at connect.microsoft.com.
What would you need to run it? Just a regular PC?
Yeah, you need a dedicated machine. A PC, okay. A PC would be fine. It has to be 64-bit.
Okay.
I think you only need a gigabyte of RAM, possibly two, but I think it's a gig, and you need a 160-gig hard drive.
Cool.
I mean, obviously, the primary advantage of both of these systems, because they both have the same underpinnings, is actually the storage stuff, because it uses that Windows Home Server drive extender technology. And what that means is that you can plug in a hard drive, internal or external, and it just adds it to the pool of storage. You don't have to screw around with partitions.
Oh, that's neat.
All that stuff. It's just automatic. It's really, really
neat.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I think it's way, but I think when I get home, I'm actually going to switch to Aurora for the user management stuff, right? And for data, personal data.
Mm-hmm.
Use Vail for the media sharing and all that. Because, like anyone else, I will have two servers in my home.
Of course, as everybody does these days. It's the future.
The Microsoft way.
Yeah. More servers.
Anyway, I think more servers the better. And the other thing about Aurora is that unlike Small Business Server, the traditional Small Business Server, is it assumes that you can install local servers if you want it. If you want to install Exchange for some reason, like you hate yourself or whatever, you can do that. But
if you're a real masochist.
No, but most people are going to use Google Apps or Exchange Online or whatever. They're going to get that stuff out of the cloud, right. Windows Live. So what you need locally is this, user and security management, computer management. It does the auto PC backups every night, system images as well as file backups with all the recovery options. It's all automatic. And the drive extender stuff, it's got all the storage on there. So it's really kind of the right product. It's neat to see them finally doing this. So hopefully the final version will be out before the end of the year.
So this is really small businesses. Big businesses are still going to run.
So Aurora is small business.
Right.
And, it's used the traditional servers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The standalone servers.
You're really breaking up. I apologize
for
people who are hearing dropout. Let me call you right back, see if we can,
see if
we can clean that up here.
Do. So here we are talking about how awesome things are in Europe and just failing all over the place.
Well, you sure you're not on the Wi-Fi? You're on the wire?
No, I'm positive. This one doesn't have Wi-Fi configured. So.
It's just, it's a guy, Dieter, down the street is doing BitTorrent.
It does. Maybe my son's upstairs playing video games.
Yeah.
It shouldn't matter. Actually, I'm on the wire. And they do have a really decent connection here. So
we'll see.
I'm not sure what's going on.
Who knows? Skype is,
Yeah.
Deutsche Telekom saying he's Skyping. You must turn it off now.
I know. It looks like I'm on dial-up. Maybe it's my... I should turn this one off. I'll get it off the network. I don't see where it would matter.
You know?
But I'll do it.
Do it anyway. What the heck?
I'll do it for you.
Do it for me. Don't do it for yourself.
I'll do it for the children.
Do it for the children.
Okay.
Moving along to item number three, Windows Live Essentials. There's a public beta refresh. We talked about the beta of this and highly recommended it. You don't get that automatically updated, though. You have to explicitly get it.
Yeah, because it's a beta version. And,
right.
You know, again, I think people listen to this, whatever, it shouldn't be an issue. But, yeah, there's some interesting stuff here. They, you know, they changed the install routine. Each of the applications has a couple of things that are better about it. You know, the mail app understands the default Gmail folders, for example. That I know they're not really folders, but the folder structure they have up there will map into the program automatically, which
that's
is neat.
Nice. That's really nice. There's some,
yeah, that's good stuff. There's Photo Gallery added some Bing Map integration, which actually isn't as good as it sounds. One of the things I've been doing on this trip is I purchased a camera before we left that has a GPS in it for the geotagging stuff. And it is, I sort of envision in the future, you know, if you have a website or something that has pictures from the trip, you could actually, you know, have them be on a map, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if you use Google Picasa,
it does that.
It actually has that right in the application. Yeah. It's neat.
Yeah.
This just adds a link where you can go see where the picture was taken, and then it loads Bing Maps in a separate, you know, in the web browser, and it works, but it's not as seamless as it is on the Google one, but it's pretty good.
I think iPhoto does it, but it does it internally on iPhoto. They may be an iWeb connection. I don't know. I haven't tried that. Does Facebook do that? Facebook is who should do that. Facebook has become the photo sharing default.
Yeah, because it's not easy enough to stalk people on Facebook yet.
Right. You really want to make it as easy as... They just added places on the, you know, this new... You check in now on Facebook.
I don't see that on Facebook, and I think it might be because I'm in Germany.
It is absolutely. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
The Germans would have a fit. They hate that stuff.
Right. So, you know, just across the board, if you look at the different applications, you know, Movie Maker, Writer, which is awesome, Family Safety, et cetera, all of them have something. So if you are using this beta version of Windows Live Essentials, obviously...
Update.
Yeah, you're going to want to go grab the new version.
Get the new version now. We have been hearing a lot lately about, is Steve Ballmer the problem with Microsoft? Is he the wrong guy to run it?
Yep.
And you say nay.
Oh, no, I'm not saying nay.
You agree.
I'm not saying that either. I have mixed feelings about that.
It's hard to know if somebody's a good chief. You're following in somebody's pretty big footsteps.
Right. And frankly, that's a guy who stayed on maybe longer than he should have. Mm-hmm. And we know from the stories that have come out since that he had a hard time giving up control of the company at first. It was kind of an uneasy transition there, which makes sense. He had been there most of his life. You know, who knows? It's tough because you have people like Steve Jobs, who obviously has come out of nowhere to be this unbelievable success story. And when you compare anyone to Steve Jobs, they just look bad by comparison.
Right. I would hate to be the guy who succeeds him.
Yeah, I mean, right. You know, whoever that is, Peter Oppenheimer, whoever it is going to look like a jerk.
Yep.
So, no, I think this is Money Magazine did this. They basically looked at CEOs of companies that outperformed the S&P 500 last year, and then they rated them based on salary, from lowest salary to highest. And then they published a list of the top 15, meaning the people who earned the lowest salary.
Earned their way versus...
Yeah. Yeah, so in other words, Mark Hurd, for example, had his exodus from HP recently, and that guy has some crazy golden parachute where he's set for life. Yeah. Guy's probably going to work again, which is crazy to me, but... You know, he's getting anywhere from $20 to $40 million.
Right.
You know, Steve Ballmer, comparatively speaking, doesn't really make all that much money. You know, Steve Jobs supposedly makes $1 a year, although obviously he's been compensated.
Well, both of them have stock; they own significant portions of the company. So,
yeah, but this is salary.
This is minus stock.
Yeah, yeah, right. I would assume if you cashed in stock that year, that might count as
right.
Part of your earnings and so forth. Right. But if you look at the tech industry CEOs that are on the list, the only people that are in front of Steve Ballmer are Steve Jobs, of course, who's number one, and Michael Dell.
Now, Dell, I wouldn't say has done very well. I mean, Dell's struggling, aren't they?
Well, sort of, right? So, but they're also outperforming the S&P 500,
right? Well, there you go.
Which isn't horrible. And as the founder of the company, I mean, you got to remember the reason he came back, like the guy who ran Ted Waite when he came back to run Gateway, for the same reason. You know, the company wasn't flying along as fast as they were for a while there, and he felt like he needed to have more of a hands-on role. And certainly they've had their ups and downs, but I think Dell's going to be okay. You know, Dell is still the number one PC maker in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, we conveniently forget while we're trashing the poor company, but
I love Dell. I'm a Dell fan. I'm a Dell fanatic almost. I think the problem mostly is just margin, not a failure in any other, although they do have that kind of embarrassing thing where they denied that there was anything wrong with the capacitors and
Yeah. I'm not an economist or anything like this, but it's interesting because comparing Steve Jobs and Michael Dell, you look at the Michael Dell model and you think this is a company that was able to do very well for a long, long time because they could always get the lowest prices on components and they had the quickest time to market. And, you know, PCs are commodities and, you know, they made that transition very easily from the phone-based purchasing model they had earlier on to the internet. It was an obvious transition. And you sort of look at that and you think, well, what could ever go wrong for this company? And then you look at something like Apple and what Steve Jobs does, and you think, my God, this guy sells really expensive trinkets that nobody needs. This is a company that can't possibly do really well. And then you kind of compare them now, and it's like, what happened there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really interesting, and it's the type of thing. You know, I've never made any claim to being able to see the future or anything like that. But you know, you look at it logically, and it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But there it is. You know, and I have no explanation for it, but it certainly is the way it has happened. So
it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the tech industry. It's just so volatile; it moves so fast. You know, you can't say there's a first mover advantage. That's not really true. You can't say it's. I guess you could say it's marketing driven, but then there's some. There's something else going on, too. I think it's very hard to predict. It's one of the reasons that I'm glad I don't buy tech stocks, because I would...
Could you imagine? Dad had a brief foray into tech stocks probably over a decade ago, and I remember one of the stocks he had was Intel. And the way Intel stocks would go is Intel would make some product announcement or some quarterly results announcement. Their stock would shoot up for a little while, and he would be very happy. And then one of their competitors, AMD or whoever, would make some announcement, and then Intel stock would shoot down for a little while. And my dad would always be very unhappy. And this is a guy who doesn't like the ups and downs. He shouldn't be playing the stock market at all, actually. So, but the tech stock market, you have to think it's probably
super volatile. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the real stock market.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely.
He didn't last long.
That's why they call it playing the market. It's playing you. So Steve Jobs, number one, Michael Dell, number two, and Steve Ballmer in the sixth of 15. That's not bad. Not bad, based on performance.
Yep.
The tragic Mac pad. I like that.
You know what bugs me about that?
What?
I actually coined that phrase independently, but I've seen it around.
It's
you know,
good.
People have used it.
Credit to you, Paul.
No. I'm positive others have independently come to this as well. It's a very dyslexic thing to do.
Right.
You know.
Spoonerism.
Anyway, you know, Microsoft a few weeks back started leaking partial photos of some device, you know. Remember the little corner of something? You know,
Microsoft does this. They go, we've got one too. We did it too. We have
some
the surface.
People would say, maybe it's a tablet. Maybe it's a smartphone. Maybe it's the next Zune. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. You know, and then eventually it was revealed to be some kind of a mouse. You know, and then of course everyone's like, "Oh, this is going to be like that." You know, Apple. What's it really called?
Magic trackpad. Yeah.
You know, multi-touch kind of thing. And my take on the multi-touch device stuff was simple. You know, on the PC side, not that everyone's bought into it, but you know this. Lenovo laptop I have, for example, has a 4-point multi-touch screen. It's fairly amazing what you can do with it. And to me, that's where the touch belongs, you know, on the screen. Because you want to interact directly with objects.
Yeah. You don't want to do it here.
It's a more natural thing, you know. Now, Apple's approach, obviously, has been to do it through the trackpad. So the trackpads have gotten larger and larger. And now, eventually, what they've done is they've released this... device you can plug, you know, you can plug into or use with a desktop computer as well. So that's nice. But you know, it's funny, this Arc Touch mouse is, if anything, even less interesting because all it really is the next version of their Arc mouse, which I tested last year and found to be probably the biggest ergonomic disaster that's ever occurred in computing, you know, since the original keyboard. I mean, it's just an absolute disaster. And but one of the things that was neat about it, aside from the styling, which a lot of people found very attractive because, you know, it has this little arched look to it, is that you could fold it up.
And yeah,
you could
throw I have it in your bag. One. I like it.
Yeah, and you can bring it with you. Yeah. So, well, compared to the little Dickie mice.
The little what?
Bring, a little Dickie-sized travel mice. It's a German term. I don't know.
Okay. Wait a minute. What is it? Is it a little Dickie mice?
The Dickie mouse. It is better than that. But, you know, for a real mouse, a regular mouse you'd use at your desk, it's just, you know, it's not a great thing. So,
do you mean this Dinky or Dickie? Dinky?
I don't think we should spend too much time parsing that sentence.
Okay,
but
sorry.
I did mean to say Dickie.
Okay, just checking. I wanted to, when I make the show title, I just want to make sure that I do it. I spell it correctly.
I got you. God, we live in an age where everything we say is just going to haunt you forever.
Yeah, you're not exactly Dr. Laura. You're okay here.
Okay. So.
You in Germany, they probably didn't cover that because she's an American.
Right. Actually, I did see that.
Yeah.
So.
I think you say Dickie on the podcast. I think you could say that.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was on the Tom Likas show, before he became like Tom Likas, I hate women, Tom Likas, he just did a regular show. And he had me on as a computer guy. And I said, my wife always says I'm dicking around with a computer.
Right.
And they bleeped it. They dumped it.
They bleeped that, really.
It wasn't even a bleep. You know, when you dump it on the radio, it's like suddenly something, like the whole chunk is gone, like it never happened.
You know, if you were in Boston, you would have to bleep every conversation that occurs on any street corner.
I know. Hey, you're dicking around with a computer. It's wicked good. Eh?
I don't know what that accent is.
Wicked.
Wicked.
Beep.
Beep. Anyway, I like the Arc mouse. I have the Arc mouse.
Well, then you might find this interesting because this is basically the next version of that. The difference is that the buttons and the scroll wheel are touch, right? They're not actual physical buttons.
They're touch sensors. It's kind of like
you can scroll with a touch.
It's like the magic mouse.
Perhaps. I've not. Yeah, I don't know. and it doesn't fold up like the old one. Instead, you can actually kind of lay it out flat. I think you actually kind of hammer it flat. And then it goes in your bag. I know, it's crazy.
What is this called?
It's called the Microsoft Arc Touch Mouse.
It's the new Arc, though.
Yeah.
It's the Arc
Touch. It's coming
Touch.
Out this fall to a PC near you.
That you hammer.
I believe the point is you can make it flat so you could push it under a door. You know? So if I was locked in the house.
It's just weird looking.
It is weird looking. It looks like a... It looks like one of those exercise chairs, almost.
The mouse arches its back for comfortable mousing before packing flat for easy transport.
It's maybe like it purrs when it arches its back.
It's the mouse that rises up to meet you.
Yikes. Yes. Hopefully it doesn't contort itself in your bag and cause an incident on a plane.
Is it made of liquid metal?
I don't know.
It's the Terminator. Wow. Yeah. That's really interesting. Huh. Microsoft, people forget Microsoft was a big mouse manufacturer for a long time. Still is.
Still are, yeah.
Big part of their business.
I actually still prefer Microsoft mice. You know, the Explorer mouse, the wired version, which is, you know, they're harder and harder to find. But, you know, those really big mice.
That's what I have everywhere.
Ergonomically speaking, yeah. Yep. The best thing to use, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, just recently they took the... Jammer B, John, who uses my system as well, said, no, I'm getting one of these Logitech Anywhere MX mice. He likes the smooth scroll. It's got a clutch in the scroll wheel. But
give
I still
have...
Yeah, I know, really. I still have...
Obviously, you can tell from my manly physique that I spend a lot of time in front of the computer.
And, you know your mice, my friend.
Well, no, I was going to say, years ago, and it really was years ago, I noticed some cramping in the top of my hands.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, oh, man, this is it, right? This is the beginning of some kind of carpal tunnel syndrome thing.
And what am
I going to do? Because this is what I do for a living.
It's your livelihood.
But what I did was, and this has really worked, is I use a fully ergonomic keyboard at home, in a Microsoft one. And I use the bigger the better with the mice. For a while, I went to the trackballs because back at that time, 70 years ago, whatever this was, those were the biggest things you could get, you know, for that. But it really makes a huge difference. You know, those gelatin hand rests and all that stuff. I mean, if you're going to be in front of the computer all day, and you shouldn't be, but if you are going to be, you got to take care of that stuff, because that's what's going to kill you. That's well, what, not kill yeah. you, but
no,
well,
no, well,
you, and your career
it could put your career out of business. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it's pretty yeah. serious stuff.
Yep.
Take care of your wrist, and it will take care of you.
Yeah, and I have none of this. I have no issues at all. Good. With my hand.
Glad to hear that. Let's see. Do you want to do the chat room queue? Let's take, I think we have time to get some chat room questions. So let me get the chat room fired up. Okay. You all suck. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not, no. Let me get the chat room fired up.
They're all yours, Paul.
and we will give you some questions that you can answer in, okay. just, in just a little bit. The chat room is ready and willing and able to challenge all right, Paul. Ready. But before we do that, I want to mention our friends at Squarespace.com. These are the folks who make it easy to create your new website. I have to say, Squarespace is one of the reasons more and more people are kind of avoiding the elaborate web designers. And, you know, a lot of web designers are saying we're having trouble finding work because people can do it themselves with Squarespace.com. It's the secret behind exceptional websites. Actually, designers like it too, because what happens is you go to Squarespace.com. You can try this free for 15 days. Even import all the content from your existing movable type WordPress, Typepad, or Blogger blog, so you can really see what it looks like with content. Use one of their beautiful templates to start. But here's the glory thing. So once you've got the template installed, then you have absolute control over it using JavaScript, CSS if you're a professional designer, or drag and drop if you're not. So it really gives you huge control. That's why there are no two Squarespace sites that look alike. We use Squarespace for a blog. I'm setting up my radio show on Squarespace. I know a lot of people have moved to Squarespace. It really just is the secret to exceptional sites. I want you to try it now and get 10% off the Squarespace site of your choice for the rest of your life. So you can try it free for 15 days. But after you try it, if you decide to buy it, and it starts as low as $8 a month, use the offer code WINDOWS and 10% off for life, which is a pretty darn good deal. These guys are really nice. We just love the folks, Anthony and Dane and the gang over there at Squarespace, and we're really happy to be part of the Squarespace family. Look at that. See, that you just slide it over. You can make your site look any way you want to without even, you know, any coding. But again, it doesn't leave the designer out. If you are, you know, if you like to mess with the CSS and all that, you have access to that as well. It's really kind of the best of both worlds. A great iPhone app too, stats, a whole lot more. Squarespace.com/windows to try it free for 15 days and use the promo code Windows for 10% off for life from Squarespace, the secret behind exceptional websites. Thank you so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Of course, it works in Windows, Mac, anything, anywhere the browser works. What? What do you got? What do you got there?
It's a German cat.
Oh, what is the word for cat in German? Kat. It's Kat. So it's Kat. Yeah, it's the Kat. So we are ready to take some questions from the chat room, starting from with Cockney Pete, who says, "What do you think about Microsoft Dart? DART. Do you know what that is?"
Yes, I do.
What
is it? Like the it's part of the MDOP tools, Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. It's like the disaster. I think is that the. I don't remember which one. Disaster Recovery Tool Set.
Oh, okay, cool. Right? Yeah, that makes sense. Disaster Recovery Tool. Do you use that? What do you use if the worst happens to you?
No, I don't. No. So, there are some tools in MDOP that I've used a lot, and there are some I have not used a lot, and that's one of the ones I've not used a lot. So I don't have anything hugely intelligent to say about it, other than that. That package of tools in general is awesome, and for the most part, it's available only to people who are in Microsoft's, you know, volume licensing.
Stands for Microsoft plan. Web 3162. Says Microsoft Diagnostics and Recovery Toolset.
Yeah. So, you know, Windows Vista started this, and Windows 7 is a slightly better version of it. But Windows, all modern versions of Windows have some sort of disaster recovery thing built in. In Windows 7 is actually installed on the disk for you. The Dart tools are a more consistent across the versions, I guess, and have more tools. They have some of the you know, the sysinternal stuff in them and all that stuff. So I haven't used it a lot, but it's a, if you have access to it.
Here's a good one from Mel H. Can you remove the SIM from your Windows 7 phone and still use it? That, some people do that with their iPhones, and it makes it kind of a, you know, a, like, yeah, yeah, a, like yeah, iPod Touch. Can you do that with a Windows 7 phone?
I don't know. I can do it right now if you want. All right. I could try it.
While Paul's doing I'll that, let's use Mead's question. Will Microsoft ever bring Bob back? I can answer that one. No. Nine.
I saw a question in there about that Bend.
Yeah, he also asked about Bend. Mel H. did, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that. You know, I made that recommendation a couple weeks ago, I think, when Tom was on the show.
We talked about it last week. It disappeared.
It just disappeared, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably because I recommended it.
It's your fault.
And it's I mean, it's gone. There's no way to know. I don't know who to contact or who to ask about it. I mean, I don't know.
These things happen.
See if I can electrocute myself. One thing that's been odd in Germany is that switching between networks has been difficult and manual. And it's not just this phone. It's happened on the iPhone. It happened on my friend's.
They don't just automatically recognize the
I know. In France, no problem. Very seamless interchange between the networks. And here, it's been kind of a problem.
Will SBS, or while you're waiting to see what happens with that SIM, will SBS Aurora support Hyper-V? Fair one.
Someone was going to ask that. You know, I don't have it here to look at, but I do believe yes. I want to say that Aurora is essentially standard server, Windows Server 2008 R2 standard. And yes, I think that you can. If I remember off the top of my head, I think there's a limitation around the instances of, virtualized guests that you can have, something like that. But I don't remember. Yeah, so it says SIM error. The SIM, it just shut off.
So it won't work without a working SIM.
Yeah, missing or invalid. You can still make emergency calls if your service provider supports it. And then, no, actually, then it comes up.
Oh, good. So you could use it as a, you know, Zoom or play those games and so forth.
Yep.
Evo 4G for the win asks a question I've liked to know the answer to. How will we know if the new Xboxes, those ones they just released at E3, there is no red ring on them? Is there any evidence that they're having any of the overheating problems that earlier Xbox 360s had?
So I haven't heard anything like that yet. I mean, we'll see. I mean, obviously I'm a pessimist, so I'm waiting for that to happen. Yep. I do feel that it probably runs, they probably run a little bit hotter than the old versions. They run a lot quieter, which I think is a fair trade-off. It's the same basic thing as before. I mean, you still want to have some room for the exhaust fan there to, you know, do its thing. But I think the trick with this is going to be 6 months down the road, a year down the road, see how they fare in the real world. But
we haven't heard of any overheating issues yet.
No. And supposedly, if these things overheat, they don't kill themselves like the old ones did. They actually shut down before any problems, any hardware problems can occur. So supposedly there's some intelligence in there, and hopefully that is the case.
I've been waiting to buy a new one just kind of on that precise thing. We do know it's quieter.
I was waiting to see. Absolutely quieter, yeah. I wanted to see what they were going to do with the low-end version because I was hoping that I could get my son something that was less expensive.
Right.
But it was still one of the new versions. And actually, I don't like what they did with that because it's got a very minimal amount of storage. And what you're going to really want is a hard drive. So it looks like the real version is the one that's out now.
Now, your Windows Phone 7, as you said, is AT&T. And Jonathan's a little worried that Microsoft will only be AT&T. There's no evidence of that, right?
Yep.
Will it be on all carriers? Do we know yet?
Well, they haven't announced exactly who's doing what and all that. What I was told was that it would be on all the major carriers, I think is the easiest way to say it. You know, there's been some stories lately about, you know, supposedly Verizon and Microsoft have had some falling out and, you know, because of the kin and all that stuff. But I think you're going to see it across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, these things happen. I don't think any carrier would say, oh, we're not going to do business with Microsoft because the kin was a flop.
Right.
That's not, right. That doesn't make any sense.
I think the kin was a flop, at least partially because of Verizon. I mean, Microsoft,
you could point fingers. That's right.
But yeah.
You could easily point fingers to others for the data pricing plan, for instance, which is what you complained about.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first. Before we even knew what it was, I said, if they get that right, this thing will be fine.
Right.
And then they got it exactly right.
Yep. Yeah. All right. That was our chat with Paul edition for the day.
Semi stumbling through.
I'm going to declare it a rollicking success because I can. And we'll move on.
All right. Fair enough.
Let's move on to our Windows 7 feature of the week and our tip of the week, something we do every week, although we're maybe running out of features to talk about. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I talked about this with, I just forgot his name, Tom Merritt.
Tom, and, when he filled in. Yeah.
I think when Windows Phone comes out, I'm going to, we'll start doing
Switch.
We'll do a phone thing.
Perfect.
You know, because I think that makes sense.
Perfect.
I will have started writing them on the website before then, but I think one of the things I learned with Windows 7 and the podcast is, you know, you and I talked about a lot of Windows 7 features
right
in the year before Windows 7 came out, which maybe was interesting, maybe it wasn't. But once Windows 7 did come out, I got a lot of email from people who said, hey, I sort of forgot. Vaguely remember you talked about this, yeah, but
I forgot. What was
now,
it that you
now
said?
Now I actually have it. So yeah. I think it makes sense to do that. You know, when it's out.
Good.
But we are getting to the bottom of the barrel, I guess. So.
Well, I wouldn't say sticky notes is the bottom of the barrel.
No. But I'm in a tough spot personally this week because we're flying home this weekend. So I didn't want to put myself out on a limb for too much work. So we could probably discuss everything there is to discuss about sticky notes in like 30 seconds.
Good. You know? Let's get it done.
So Windows 7 like has that. A feature called Sticky Notes.
It's exactly as you would expect.
Sticky Notes is exactly what you think it is. And they come in colors.
How do you launch Sticky Notes? Do you use your little Dickie mouse to do that?
You do. Or you could use your keyboard.
Okay.
Which is how I would do it.
Well, yes, because you want to keep typing. So what is the keyboard shortcut?
Well, you would, I don't know that there is this keyboard shortcut, but you can do it from start menu search, right? Just type in stick, for example, and sticky notes will be at the top of the list. And they look like sticky notes. You have to wonder if they're paying 3M some sort of per unit charge.
If they were, they'd call it post-it notes.
Yeah. A lot of people wonder why this thing isn't a gadget, and that's a valid question.
It'd be a perfect gadget, because then you could have a little sticky note tray.
You could
mouse a note right out of the tray like you were.
Yeah.
You could stick it on the window. Be great.
Can't do that.
Can't do any of that. I think there are third-party sticky notes that you can do that with.
Let's not get crazy, Leo. We're only covering Windows 7 features.
How about a Windows 7 tip of the week, my friend?
This one was actually tipped off, if you will. God. Anyway, by an email from Alan Burchill, who wrote me and asked, hey, did you know about this? And it is one of those things I sort of knew about but had completely forgotten about, which is a feature of the Windows 7 libraries functionality. So we'll get to that in one moment. But for those who don't remember, one of the new features in Windows 7 is this libraries, you know, virtual library or virtual folder scheme. And what it does is it replaces the old special shell folders from previous versions of Windows with virtual folders that aggregate content from one or more locations on the disk. So, for example, by default, it ships, Windows 7 does, ship with four libraries, documents, music, pictures, and videos. And each of them points to two different locations by default. So, for example, the documents library will point to your My Documents folder that's associated with your user account, as well as the public documents folder that's associated with the public user account. So what I wanted to discuss this time was some of the things that you can do around libraries, which may or may not be obvious. So, for example, you can customize which folders are aggregated. In fact, one of the very first things I do on any PC install is get rid of that second folder for all of those folders. I don't want anything to do with content that's stored in the public folder structure at all. So, you know, public documents, public pictures, public, you know, videos, public music. I actually wipe that stuff out by default. Mm-hmm. Some things will customize those libraries for you. So, for example, when you install the connector software from Windows Home Server, it actually connects those folders to the locations on the home server that have that content, which is kind of a neat thing to do. When you install the Zune PC software now, it actually creates a new library called Podcasts, you know, for storing podcasts.
That's cool.
Yeah, you can create your own custom library. So I've not done this myself, but you could kind of imagine doing this for a project like a book maybe that you're working on. You can create a new library where you might store, you know, different content related to the book, and maybe some of the content's on a server, maybe some of it's in a certain location on your hard drive, some of it's in a different location. You can aggregate that all into the same place. But the tip that kind of got this thing started was, if you've been mucking around with your default libraries, and this only applies to the default libraries, you can actually restore them to their original mappings.
Oh.
If you have customized them and you just kind of want to do it very quickly, you can actually right-click on the library's entry that's in the tree view in an Explorer window. And one of the choices that's there is restore default libraries.
That is handy.
Yeah, and it just brings everything back to kind of the way it was, you know, when the system was fresh. So that's kind of a neat thing. And I was vaguely aware of that, but it's one of those things I just don't run into a lot. You know, why would you? And I thought that was kind of a neat tip. So I think some people maybe might have wiped out their libraries. They might have, you know, pointed them off in some different place.
I did.
And now they don't know.
I did. When I started playing with it, I messed it up pretty bad.
Yeah. So this is a way to restore everything back to the way it was.
Awesome. That's just a right click.
Yeah. Simple, you know. So I'll write this stuff up. You know, the sticky notes article, I wouldn't...
oh, that's going to be a voluminous...
I won't be winning any awards for that one, but... this one perhaps will be more substantial.
You know, I wouldn't deprecate yourself or the subject, because I'll be honest with you. Often we who are pro aficionados... forget that normal people, that's that kind of stuff, they go, wow, that's great, that's hideously useful, and we go, you didn't know about it? No, I had no idea. So I wouldn't knock yourself there. I think that might actually
if I get one positive email like that from anybody, I will send you
something. You'll say, Leo, just say, Leo, you were right, my friend, you were right.
Okay,
remember, I do a radio show for morons, so I'm used to that. Dr. Laura, here I come.
The people from Germany who came to our house discovered a book in our house called Boston for the Complete Idiots, which they thought was funny. And the truth is, we don't know how that got there. I think somebody
made a joke.
Else who had stayed there must have bought it and then left it, you know, that's so future funny. People could have it. So I said to them, you know, I got that just for you, but you can keep it if you want.
Boston for Complete Idiots. It is time to, and of course, the people who listen to the radio show are not idiots. They're quite, they're normal people, which is really one of the reasons I like doing the radio show, because we get, you
God
know,
bless them.
They're people, it always reminds me that not everybody is an enthusiast. Not everybody spends every waking hour thinking about, I wonder what happens if I right click here. And those are the real users. That's who this stuff is built for. So they deserve a little attention from time to time, and I'm glad to give it to them. And get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do
it. I ran a computer lab years and years
you
ago.
Know about
and,
that?
And the biggest advice I remember, Microsoft had, it was that version of Word before Windows 95 came out, probably, Office, you know, like Office, Word 6 and those applications. And they had added right click.
Right.
So the solution to everything at that point in time was right click.
Just see what happens.
And it was always right. You know, someone would raise their hand and I'd come over and say, I can't figure out how to do this thing.
And you look like a wizard.
Yeah, did you right click on that? And I go, oh, look at that.
You look like a brilliant, brilliant person.
Yeah, it was a quick way to start them.
Yeah, you know, just right click. Now I just say just reinstall Windows, and then you know, it almost always works.
Right.
Let us get to our Audible pick of the week. Audible, of course, that great place where you get the audiobooks. 75,000, actually must be more like 80 or 85,000 now, because it's growing all the time. Wonderful titles, right. Every kind of a book you can imagine. When you're traveling like Paul does, if you have a commute, even if, for me, I go to the gym every day, and I love having a great book to listen to. I just finished The Contortionist Handbook, loved it, and I love it that I immediately on my device, and I use an Android device, but it works fine on iPhones, Zunes, Kindles, pretty much everything, iPods. I immediately have another book. I can't wait. It's like there's always something waiting for me.
Wonderful books. Now, you see there's a book called The Big Lie, Spying, Scandal, and Ethical Collapse at Hewlett-Packard. I'm putting that on my list. But I think that this is kind of a little opportunistic. They probably were working on the book, and then the Mark Hurd thing happened.
This must be the... Oh, I see what you're saying.
Came out in May.
Like the pretexting scandal.
It is the pretexting scandal. Came out in May. Yeah. I guess that's... it just never ends, does it? But you have a pick that I also cannot wait to listen to.
Yeah, we've visited a bunch of places here in Germany and then also in France, and all of them places we had never been before. And one of those places was Stuttgart, and we ended up going to the Mercedes Museum. There's also a Porsche museum there. Mm-hmm. I've always been a closet car fanatic, and this sort of reinvigorated an interest in this, and I wanted to have an understanding about what, had happened in the car industry.
Right.
Over the past several years. And I looked for something around, Chrysler and Daimler had merged.
Right. That's right.
For some time.
Yeah.
Kind of the auto industry version of AOL Time Warner, I guess. Right. Didn't work out.
Compaq HP, yeah.
I was looking for something around that. I didn't really see anything great around there. But what I ended up getting was a book called Crash Course, The American Automobile Industry's Road from Glory to Disaster. And it looks like, this is literally something I'm going to be listening to on the way home from Germany this week, but it looks amazing, and it is one of the more highly recommended books of this type, I guess, about this topic. So I have not listened to this yet, but this is my trip home in a nutshell, I guess. So,
isn't that great? I mean, it's 12 hours. That'll be the whole flight, and you'll have something, and you'll come back, and this is what I really like about Audible. You'll know something. You can play a video game the whole time or watch a movie, but Audible's great because it is entertaining. It's absolutely as engaging as a movie. I think of it as a movie in your brain, but often it's also very satisfying. You feel like, wow, that was time well spent. I got something out of that. It's a great way to pass time in a car. I'll tell you what, I commuted for 12 years to San Francisco, 2 hours a day for 12 years. If it weren't for Audible,
yikes
is the word. So I owe Audible a great debt of gratitude. And I think if you have a long commute, if you have time where you just can't hold a book, but you'd like to get more reading done, audible.com. Now, if you go to audible.com/windows, you could subscribe to the gold account. That's a book a month. I have the platinum. I do two books a month. In fact, as you can see, I have two credits. I'm so excited. But start with one a month. And the first book free. So this is a great way to start. Crash Course, The American Automobiles Industry from Glory to Disaster. I'm absolutely adding that to my cart. You can get that free. Listen to it. Keep it forever. If you decide to quit, you can quit at any time. But I have to say, I've been a member for 10 years and had no desire to quit. I love Audible. You will too. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Software pick of the week, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, I had a couple of people emailed me about this, Joseph Clark and Lubos Valenta, so thank you for that. This is that thing, there have been unofficial versions of this, but it's a Bing dynamic theme for Windows 7.
Oh.
And what it basically does is do the auto-updating thing, right? So it's not just a static set of images, it actually does update over time.
And this is from Microsoft.
This is from Microsoft, yeah.
How often do you get a new picture?
I can't tell you because I'm currently offline, Leo. But
well, let me see. It says switch it up. Receive two new photos from Bing every week for 3 months.
Yep.
And then you have there's other downloads if you go to this page. Bing's Best, Bing's Best 2, Bing's Best 3, and Bing's Best Japan. So this is great.
Yeah. So the Bing's Best collections are the static ones.
Right.
So those won't change. Right. But those are great sets of wallpapers.
But you could, and this might be a good tip, but you can pick a random, shifting theme and add images to it. Did you know that? You sound stunned.
I'm sorry, I lost you. I said you can, and then you said
you can. You know, I believe if it's my memory is correct on Windows 7, you could choose one of the random shifting themes, and then you can go back to the images and check all of them and say I want these to be part of it. So it's fine to download static images and make them part of a rotating theme.
That's true. Right, and also this particular theme is using a sort of a hidden feature in Windows 7, which is the ability to use an RSS feed to populate the images, right? So it's actually doing it dynamically. And this is something anyone could create a theme like this, apparently, but they just it's just not super easy like the regular themes.
Well, now that we know, I mean, I hope there'll be Flickr themes and others because if you know, there's a lot of great images in RSS. Yeah. You know what I'd love? You could do a Boston Globe big picture or the NASA photo of the day. Both those are RSS themes.
Those almost certainly exist, I would imagine. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Also, just as a reminder, you know, the new beta version of Windows Live Essentials is out this week, and also those beta versions of Aurora and Veil. So if you're interested in that stuff, you know, the betas are free. You can check them out and see what's going on there, too.
You know what else is free? This show. This show is free. You can watch us do it live every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC, 2 p.m. Eastern time.
And this week,
live.
This week, I feel like it should be free. You know,
you get what you pay for, folks. No, this is a great. What are you, Paul? You're so self-deprecating. This was a great show. I enjoyed it. Love doing this show every week, and I encourage everybody to tune in live at live.twit.tv or subscribe so you get it automatically on your Zune or your iPod or your Kindle or whatever device you listen to podcasts on. And we're in the Zune marketplace. We're also on iTunes. But the easiest way to subscribe is go to twit.tv/ww. For Windows Weekly, twit.tv/ww. And you could there's a subscribe drop-down for both audio and video, and so you get the format you want on the platform you want. And, of course, we're on Roku now, which is really awesome. That means, thanks to MediaFly, we're on Roku, Popcorn Hour, almost every portable platform. So very easy. There's a Twit application for almost everything.
You can my son walked by the TV, and I was checking out the Roku thing, and he stopped, and then he looked at it. And he said, "Oh, now you're big, tough TV man, are you?" Oh! It was something like that.
Out of the mouths of babes. Let me tell you, I've been taking abuse from my kids for a long, long time. As they get older, they get worse.
Fantastic.
Isn't it something to look forward to? Thank you, Paul Theroux. Have a great day in Germany. You'll be back next week to Dedham?
I will.
Yep. Okay, yep. We'll make sure we get out of the house and clean up before we before you get back.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll leave a beer in the fridge. God knows there's plenty in the carpet.
That.
Thank you, Paul Theroux. I'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.